My name is Catherine Gunn, and I was a whistleblower from GCHQ in 2003, just before the Iraq war started, and I blew the whistle on NSA and GCHQ subterfuge at the UN in order to try to win a vote to authorize the invasion of Iraq. GCHQ, it's evolved over time. It was created, I think, during the Second World War in order to try and break German codes. And since then, GCHQ has expanded gradually, increasingly over time. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's now resembling some sort of giant kind of squid over the whole of the UK. The main purpose of GCHQ is national security, serious and organized crime, and economic well-being. But these are such kind of amorphous terms that they obviously can expand it to whatever they think it's necessary. And GCHQ, along with every other kind of intelligence agency, is obviously part and parcel of the whole entire military industrial complex. And that whole complex has now expanded to include biosecurity surveillance. So they're just increasing their footprint over the whole of the country.
But what is biosecurity surveillance? And also the other thing which is part of GCHQ's mission, which seems a little bit strange, is this whole thing of economic well-being. What if there's some kind of British corporation that is at loggerheads with the British public? I mean, what side do they take? So you've got here biosecurity and economics. That really seems to be much more to do with surveillance rather than actually protecting the people, you know, the national security.
Yeah, it is. And we saw the biosecurity surveillance come into view during the whole scamdemic. That whole 3 years of where they wanted to test everybody and make sure everybody distanced, social distancing and all that nonsense that they were insisting on. This is the new paradigm. They're creating business for themselves. They're creating a purpose for themselves. And I think the whole point of these sorts of intelligence gathering organizations, they're never really outwardly focused. They say that they're outwardly focused, but in actual fact, it's all about controlling the domestic population. And I've now come to the realization that GCHQ and basically all of the intelligence services, they're weaponized against the people, and they always have been. I mean, a lot of this came out in 2013, 14, 15 with the Snowden revelations and so on. But that seems to have died off, you know, and GCHQ has tried to reinvent itself because it was really back then, everybody had a really bad reputation. It had a bad reputation. You know, people thought, oh, how dare they do these things? We're not criminals. We're all innocent. Why should they have access to all of our information? And so they had to do a massive, big rebranding in order to sell themselves. And it's the same with, you know, NSA. They're trying to promote themselves as protecting the British public from hacking and online subversion and election meddling and all this kind of stuff, in order to justify their encroachment into our lives, you know, and it's the whole narrative is just, it's just a sham in my view.
Corporations, obviously, but banks too. I mean, it seems to me as if by saying that they're interested in, you know, protecting the country's well-being, that they've actually taken the side of the banks. And obviously the banks are doing what most banks do, which is they're involved in debt trapping both the population and the government itself. So what do you make of this whole thing of economic well-being? It seems just that may be one of the most pernicious aims, in my view.
Yeah, you could say so. I mean, I would argue it's not just banks, it's the establishment. You know, they are part and parcel of the establishment, and that goes up to the royal family. You know, so the economic well-being is the well-being of the 1% at the top of the pile in this country. And so, yes, they did, you know, the whole business when BA, all the shenanigans with Saudi Arabia and all that stuff going way back, GCHQ would have been hand in glove in all of that. You're right. You know, obviously now with centralization of the banking industry and so on, and pushing people into the digital cash and digital money, programmable money and all of that is a huge boon to them. You know, the more data that's digital, the better for them. And so obviously they're like a pig in a mud bath. This is Christmas bonanza for them to have more and more data online so that they can scrape more and more information and target more and more of the population. So they have to sell this idea that they're protecting the majority. But it's becoming ever, it became really apparent that GCHQ had actually turned in on the British public. That whole veil was lifted in 2015, and they continue to expose themselves to this accusation that they're actually directing their attentions at us rather than at outside threats. Because in all practicalities, what can they do against outside threats? If somebody is not on British soil, what can they do about them? Other than rendition them, you know, like the US was doing with so-called terrorists in the last 10, 15 years of the war on terror, 20.
Well, they'd argue that they will be collecting data from all around the world.
Yeah, they're collecting data from all around the world, but for what purpose? What do they use that for? Whereas in the UK, they can actually arrest people. So, for example, it came out at the beginning of 2023 that, you know, more and more children are being accused of terrorism charges. Where do they get that information from? It's online. Why are they accusing 12 and 13 year old kids of terrorism charges?
Well, when we were 12 and 13, we were terrorists, actually. And it was part of our fun, part of playing.
This definition of terrorism, it's like, it's so elastic. What does a terrorist mean now? If you're anti-establishment, are you a terrorist? If you're a socialist or communist, are you a terrorist?
Well, the government of Yemen are terrorists. The army of Iran are terrorists. So is anyone you don't like, it sounds like to me. But look, Catherine, what about those who might accuse you of having a grudge against GCHQ, having had this legal battle with them?
I guess you could say my eyes were opened. You know, I went into GCHQ as a naive. I mean, I've admitted that. I was very naive when I joined GCHQ. I had really no idea. I thought, you know, I thought they were doing what they set out to do. And I did have union representation. They weren't amazing. At the end of the day, they didn't really advise me really on what my rights were. I don't remember. It was such a blur. You know, basically, my union representative was a conduit for the director of Liberty, who was then John Wadham. He was then the director. And he got in touch with the union at GCHQ and said, I understand one of your members has been accused of breaking the Official Secrets Act. I would like to get in touch with that person. And so then my union representative put me in touch with John Wadham. So that was one of the beneficiaries of having a union representative. It was the Public and Civil Service Union, PCS Union.
Did it make a difference, do you think?
Well, not really, not from my perspective, not tremendously. I mean, I had an internal process where they wanted to dismiss me, but obviously they had to go through the internal procedures. And because I had confessed, I personally didn't see a way of being able to remain there or anything like that, not that I would want to. And the union representative simply was just there to ensure that, you know, the procedures went accordingly. So I was dismissed for gross misconduct.
Well, it's looking serving the public as a civil servant, gross misconduct.
So that's the point, is that it works for the establishment, not the people, in my view.
Now, you were doing translation and analysis. Is that what mainly goes on there? Because obviously the data collection and all the information coming in is in remote. But it seems to me that maybe that's really what GCHU is doing. It's crunching through all these numbers and coming out with reports for ministers and for the military.
Well, that's part of what they do. That's what they say they do. But the real intelligence from that sort of activity is minute. You know, you don't get much of that sort of data, because all the people who have the most valuable pieces of information encrypt all of their data. What GCHQ seems to be doing a lot more of now is this covert online operations, which that came out also with the Snowden revelations, but it's more apparent since the whole last 3-4 years of COVID nonsense. You know, they were online trying to debunk all the COVID narrative that was challenging the mainstream narrative. So they've taken on this role now. They have this site in Manchester. So the whole northwest of the UK now, they have these cyber, you know, they've got a cyber hub in the northwest of the UK. Down in Cheltenham and in the southwest, they have another burgeoning hub of cyber activities, all intricately connected with the military industrial complex. You know, so it's like I say, it's this whole network and fabric of the state developing networks and extending their sphere of control over the population in order to protect them from any sort of public uprising. They have to have a network of control.
Well, actually, the public have absolutely every right to lobby and rise up and have demonstrations and that sort of thing. But look, Catherine, what was it like for you to come up, like, sort of literally face to face with what we now call the deep state?
I guess you could describe them as a power in a velvet glove, because they, in a legal sort of environment, they presented themselves in a very sort of civil manner. But of course, it later I've come to learn that the whole 8 months of them not charging me, keeping me on suspicion instead of charging me, was a deliberate tactic. So that was intended to make me feel uncomfortable and in a state of anxiety or whatever. So, you know, they do these things. They do these things to manipulate people. I'm very small fry from their perspective. I'm not somebody they are all that bothered with, because I don't concentrate attention. People like, for example, Craig Murray and others who are really a thorn in the side of the establishment. Craig Murray, you know, the former ambassador to Uzbekistan. These people who agitate very proactively for other people like Julian Assange, who are also a thorn in the side of the establishment. These people are targeted by the intelligence services, like people like Vanessa Bealey as well. These people get targeted because they are constantly digging, constantly putting out new information, new research, new investigations, and revealing the ugly side of the establishment. Till now, I have to feel that they haven't targeted me in that way, because I don't do that. You know, I haven't stuck my neck out since then, really, to a great extent.
What about this relationship with the NSA, the National Security Agency? Because Britain does seem to be increasingly becoming, I think it was Duncan Campbell and others in the 1980s coined this phrase, Airstrip 1, or the unsinkable aircraft carrier. It does seem almost everything we do is simply to serve the United States, and their big agency that is equivalent to GCHQ is this NSA.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, there are those who argue that the UK is driving the US, you know, the Anglo former British Empire. I don't know what the real truth of the matter is, but clearly there are these one percenters or the 0.1 percenters, the establishment, the business as usual, corporations and oligarchs. These are the people who they're transnational, you know, and it's not just Britain and the US, but it's other nations as well, the Five Eyes nations and Israel. And they're all intimately connected. But is there any honor between thieves? You know, so at one level, they're all working extremely closely together on all sorts of operations. But at another level, they're also distrustful of each other, I would say. So there's also a deeper level of, I don't know about antagonism, but certainly distrust, as there would be in any type of mafia type organization. And I see them as a sort of, I see all of this now as a kind of criminal cartel of mafias and intelligence at the very top. And the whole narrative that they put out, that they're trying to protect and, you know, all this nonsense, is just that. It's just this narrative that all these people constantly put out, like Davos is putting out now, the WEF, you know, putting out their messages about rebuilding trust and how they're supposed to rebuild trust. They're the ones who have mucked everything up, which has caused this chronic lack of trust that the public have with any of the establishment.
Is it possible to reform GCHQ, to change it, to make it more publicly useful, to actually do the job it's supposed to do, which is really to protect the British public?
I don't think you can, because whenever you have anything that is secret, you know, and it's not accountable, not transparent to the public, there's always potential for abuse of power. And so what we see now is the result of decades of abuse of power. And no, I mean, they will never relinquish that. And so it's inconceivable. And obviously, if you look historically at figures who tried to break up the intelligence networks, like JFK, they were dealt with.
The idea really is that it's put together in Milton Keynes, Bletchley Park, the idea that we're going to listen into the enemy, translate them, be one step ahead. And actually, that's not necessarily in peacetime. So what about now? Because we have gotten involved in supporting the Israelis, very much supporting them with weapons, etc., from Akrotiri in Cyprus, and personnel most likely too with the Israelis. And now it seems Britain has actually declared war quietly, without doing so through official channels, with Yemen.
Well, I guess some people would argue that Britain has always been at war with Yemen. I don't know the history of it very well myself, but you know, the fact that the UK is so intimately linked with Saudi Arabia and has been supporting Saudi Arabia, and the war against Yemen was Saudi Arabia versus Yemen for, I don't know how long that war has been going on for, 7 years or so. And it was only when China just tried to negotiate or got Saudi Arabia and Yemen to come to some sort of agreement. So hostilities had ceased, I think, for a period prior to this, what's going on in occupied Palestine. So Yemen was for a few months as peaceful as it has been for the last 15, 17, 20 years. So, of course, now Britain is coming in and the US as well, wanting to stir things up again. But, you know, what has all Yemen has done is to target the shipments going to Israel. That's it. So, you know, it's in comparison to what Israel is currently doing to the people of Gaza and the people of occupied Palestine, it's hardly comparable, is it? I mean, I think the US and the UK consistently over-amplify threat levels in order to justify the levels of control they have on the population. If you look at how they talked about Taiwan, for example, the election in Taiwan recently, where the DPP candidate was elected, Lai Ching-te. So he is the preferred candidate for the Anglo-American West, right? And when he was elected, the Anglo-American West are probably thinking that this is great because he's another sort of Zelensky-type character, or, well, not in real sense, but they see him as a sort of puppet of the West. And so what they're thinking now is probably that they can continue to antagonize China, right, and continue to pressure Taiwan to agitate for independence and so on. They don't understand that the reality is Taiwanese people have no interest in wanting to have any type of aggression. They want the status quo. They want to just carry on living their lives comfortably and profitably. The US and the UK don't want people to think in those terms. They want people to think that things in Taiwan are really dire and Taiwanese people are desperate for independence because they're oppressed by China. So they will carry on with this kind of narrative where they big up the levels of persecution and so on. They just overextend their narrative, and it becomes evident to the vast majority of the public that their narrative is completely overblown, that the reality is nothing like what they're trying to get people to believe. So I think this whole World War III thing is also hopefully more of the same. They want to keep the British public in a state of heightened anxiety all the time. And they've succeeded in doing that for the past 20 years. And they're continuing to do it. This is the whole modus operandi of their mechanisms of control, is to keep people in states of heightened anxiety, fear, and uncertainty. But I don't think we should buy into it.
There's actually many millions across the Middle East who are getting increasingly concerned since the Anglo-Zionist Empire, the Americans, the Israelis, the Brits have been assassinating and bombing their way around, particularly the Israelis, carrying out high-level assassinations, bombings, acts of war on Damascus and Syria, on Lebanon, in Beirut, on Iran, in Iraq, all of these surrounding countries. I mean, it's like Israel is at war with all of them, except nothing has been officially declared. This is just now supposed to be normal.
Yeah. And unfortunately and desperately, sadly, for the people who live in those countries, they're the ones who are suffering. They're the ones who are really suffering. We're not. Okay, the cost of living here is going up, and in material terms, our lives are becoming harder and more complicated. But, you know, they can never do the levels of oppression and persecution and destruction as they do overseas. And the whole point of keeping people in a state of fear and anxiety and uncertainty is to prevent them from realizing or actually standing up and resisting what they're doing to peoples abroad, you know, in other countries. They want us to be focused on our own lives and our own miseries rather than seeing the reality of what's happening in other parts of the world. It's a tactic.
You've reflected quite a lot of what Kees van der Peil is saying in his book States of Fear, where he's saying actually what's happening is a concentration of power, a dissolving of democracy, and that the elites know that the population isn't going to like this, so that they've made a lot of effort to shut down a lot of this action and debate, discussion amongst public institutions and well, also pressure groups and that sort of thing. Anyway, look, Catherine, whereabouts can people follow you if they're interested in keeping up with what you're up to?
Well, you know, I don't have a blog. I don't have Patreon. I'm just me living my life, doing my own thing. I have a Telegram account where I publish things, well, I share things and so on. Apart from that, you know, I'm on Facebook, but I'm not really very involved in Facebook anymore. I don't use it a lot. And that's about it, really.
Okay, Catherine Gunn, is there any little last message you've got for anybody who's actually listening to this who works at GCHQ today?
Well, I know GCHQ use me as an example of what not to do, and I'm sure they paint me as a really stupid, naive, wrong-headed, misguided, threat to national security type of person. But if you look at the reality of what's going on in the world, and if you look at the reality of people's lives in the UK, are any of us more secure? Are any of us better off than we were 20 years ago? Are we really? Are lives really any better now than they were, say, 30 or 40 years ago in our parents' generations, for example? I want people to think about that and think about the narrative that they're fed 24/7 from the mainstream media and from the government, and reflect on what's actually happening in the wider world and who really are the enemies. What are those so-called enemies actually doing to us? What have they actually done to us versus what our own establishment is doing to us? That's what I would say. And that probably makes me a bigger national threat to the public than my actions in 2003. But anyway, there you go.
Well, I mean, it's worth remembering, isn't it, that all came to nothing legally. It was almost as if the great behemoth you were about to face just disappeared in a puff of blue smoke.
Yeah, because if they're challenged, they don't want to be exposed. You know, they don't want their dirty linen hung up for everybody to see.
Catherine Gunn, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony, and good luck on Friday.